across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, I don't know if you guys have caught on at how much I really love music. It's a part of my life. It's a part of me. I have to create music. I have to listen to music. As a matter of fact, I rock an album. Yes, that's right. Vinyl record. Before every show, just get in the mood of whatever show I'm in. I feel I have a flavor for every mood that I'm in. And I love to do that. So often I want to tell you before the show begins, you know, what music I listen to that show to get myself into the mood. But it's never part of the narrative, so I really don't want to bring it up and bring it in. But tonight, it's a different story. Because tonight we are talking with Mark Devlin. Now, Mark is a UK-based DJ. He works in clubs. He works on the radio. He specializes in black dance music. We'll have to find out more about that with its many forms. But as he started to dig into this, and many of you know, Mark Devlin began speaking out about the dark forces that have been manipulating the music industry for decades. And this is something that has become beyond apparent, but is so bizarre that requires the expertise of someone like Mark Devlin to dig deep into these stories to really find out what's going on. And this led to the publication of his first book, Musical Truth. And this year, Mark Devlin has released Volume 2 of Musical Truth, and we want to share a lot of that with you today. So please welcome to the Free Zone, Mark Devlin. Hey, Mark.
Freeman, good to be back with you, man. Are you going to tell us what album you were rocking out to today?
I was like, yeah, I didn't ever mention that, did I?
You know, got to tell us.
It's one of my favorites. I think it's the best album ever made. I swear, and I can't believe I say this, but
ooh,
it's
that's
true.
Quite a claim.
And what's that?
That's quite a claim.
It is, but he deserves it. He deserves it as much as people don't realize. It is Lotus Flower by Prince.
Okay.
And I play this one quite often before the show. And it's one that a lot of people never heard. I had never even heard of and came across it. And if any album got Prince murdered in an elevator, it would be Lotus Flower. The messages that he's sending through this, especially in a song like Colonized Mind, would be something that the industry would not want stated. He calls out the music industry in that song, saying, hey, you're just ripping me off. It's another way to rob me blind while you're stealing my art. And it's an amazing album. It really, the Prince's Lotus Flower is definitely one of the ones that I jam more often than others. Another great one would be Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. Latest album. They just put out an album after 40 years. You guys might remember them in the audience.
Oh, sure.
OMD. If you leave, don't look now. You know, the 80s. I won't be one single day, right?
You just went to see them live, right? You
were saying? I did. I went and saw them in Atlanta, Georgia, and it was sold out. I'm certain it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see these guys. And what was the best part of that show was they did not expect the amount of adoration that they received. These guys, the hall was sold out and just packed. And the cheers were so loud. They were standing on stage dumbfounded. And it was so great to watch.
Mm. Is that the original lineup still?
As far as I know, just the two singers. I don't know if the drummer and the other keyboardist were in the original group or not. But the two original definitely are the still same guys. They played all those same songs. And actually kind of strayed away from their new album, which is called The Punishment of Luxury. Another concept album of the dystopia that we live in. Very much like Lotus Flower.
Well,
and excellent, excellent producing, Mark. I highly recommend you check out OMD's new album and check out Lotus Flower. My other favorite, of course, is Steven Wilson and Porcupine Tree. I can't get enough of this guy. He is an amazing producer and an amazing artist, so he's on both ends of the spectrum. And okay. The music industry, Mark, is well, it's, you know, it's a huge part of our lives. You know, it's no minor detail here. It's
absolutely. Well, the thing about music is everybody likes some form of it. So there's a genre that appeals to everyone in the world. It could be some kind of tribal folk music. You might be into opera. You might be into drum and bass or grunge or heavy rock or hip hop or whatever it is, or just straight pop music, you know, just the mainstream fodder that gets played on the radio. So everybody's going to be listening to something, no matter what their age group, their ethnic group. And when you have the corporate structure of the industry infiltrated and corrupted and compromised, then that's a tremendous opportunity to affect the mindsets and the subconscious value systems and perceptions and beliefs of pretty much everyone around the world. If you have controllers with malevolent thoughts in mind that don't necessarily have the upliftment of humanity as their top priority. And that, unfortunately, is the dynamic that we've had since the inception of the music industry.
Very true. Very, very true. I mean, we can see the impact of music on the human body just by looking at old people that have gone into dementia. They cannot be communicated with at all. But you stick on those old albums from when they were a kid, and suddenly they're up and dancing.
That's right.
It transforms them from bedridden dementia patient to dancing, lively, active person. It's astounding what music can do. And so, yes, if we turn it to black music. Now, I'm curious about the black dance music listed in your bio. What does that really mean?
Well, it's an all-encompassing umbrella term, really. And it would include hip-hop, R&B, soul, reggae, soulful house, garage, both the UK and US versions, and funk, basically. So in my career as a DJ, I've played all those styles of music at some point or another. I'm best known for playing hip-hop and R&B. Unfortunately, those terms have become somewhat bastardized and certainly watered down and to a large extent meaningless now. And what purports to be hip-hop in 2018 bears absolutely no resemblance whatsoever to what came before it in the early days of that genre, that art form. And the same thing with R&B. You know, you have the likes of Lady Gaga and Katy Perry described as R&B by some people now, which would not impress the likes of Marvin Gaye and Sam Cooke and Aretha Franklin to hear that, or Stevie Wonder. But that's the way these terms have been twisted and distorted. So the current generation of young people understands hip hop and R&B to be something very different to what came before. But black dance music encompasses all those styles. And that's the stuff that I've been most interested in. Unfortunately, that whole genre has become just as corrupted and debased and degraded as any other. In fact, probably more so than many others. When you look at the occult symbolism and all the mind control stuff, and also the manipulation of sound frequencies that's going into the recordings, it's often artists that are thought of as coming from these fields that are responsible for putting this stuff out. So you can think of the likes of Jay-Z, and Beyonce and Kanye West and Lil Wayne, Drake, Nicki Minaj, these kinds of individuals. And their output now is just straight satanic. And there's all kinds of stuff going on an unseen level in the sound. There's all kinds of stuff going into the videos. There's all kinds of occult ritualistic behavior coming from the artists themselves when we look into their private lives behind the scene. So it's very much a degraded genre in so many ways. And then you can factor in the high profile deaths of the likes of Prince, Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, who come out of these same genres, you know, and there's a whole load of stuff to know about there. You could do a show on each one of those. Definitely. In terms of the strange circumstances that always seem to surround these high profile deaths. So American Satan is this kind of spoof or parody of the rock industry, and particularly heavy rock. And it tells the story of this band that's up and coming. They want to make it big, and they go to LA and basically make a deal with the devil. And the devil is played by Malcolm McDowell, who was in A Clockwork Orange, this very creepy guy.
Oh, and Malcolm,
he facilitates all kinds of fame and fortune and wealth and riches for them, but they pay a very heavy price. So first of all, they have to commit a ritual sacrifice. They have to kill this guy. And then you just witness the spiritual degradation of the members, and particularly the lead singer of the band, as they just fall into this abyss of degradation, you know. And it's letting you know that that's what goes on in the industry. And when you see a band that does make it big, they will have paid a very heavy price. So more revelation of the method. That's certainly one worth looking at from the point of view of research, American Satan.
Yeah, it makes me think of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. I mean, that damn documentary had me believing they were literally and, you know, right, making deals with Satan. I mean, that 30-hour documentary was just nonstop. I mean, you could just see Bob Dylan and on and on and on. Yeah, I made the deal. I made the deal. I made the deal with the devil. It is mind-boggling.
There you go.
Well, let's, you know, as I started getting deeper into my music, and I really love it, I started collecting vinyl. And just as my treat, you know, I've never gotten anything for this show, so I started giving myself the presents of vinyl records, because I just love them. I love the art. I love having it, you know, just everything about it. But one person I have not been able to buy their record because it's $300, if you can even get it, and that is Mariah Carey.
Okay.
You cannot get Mariah Carey's records for less than $300. Now, something about the record industry is that records have not gone down in value since the Great Depression. That was the first time vinyl dipped in value. So it's a pretty solid investment considering it's lasted that long. But there it is, man. Mariah Carey. Why do you think that she's at the top of this list?
Well, I really don't know. From you having said that, you would think that she was a deceased artist, because normally when an artist's records are that difficult to get hold of, it's because demand has been pushed up by them no longer being around. So we had stories of, after Whitney Houston's demise, sales of her albums went absolutely through the roof. And I'm sure this was helped by the fact that she died just before Valentine's Day in 2012. And of course, much of her output was love songs, and people were going out and buying her back catalogue in time for Valentine's Day. And we hear the same thing about when Prince checked out, which is almost 2 years ago, actually. I remember we did a show on this talking about the symbolism of Prince in 2016. So we're just coming up on the second anniversary of that, 21st of April. And sales of his back catalogue went through the roof, as you'd expect. Same thing with George Michael. So Mariah Carey is a bit of a rarity in that she's still alive, I guess. And she was a Sony recording artist. And things don't always work out too great for Sony recording artists, or particularly those that go up against the corporation and become critical of them, such as George
Michael Jackson, of course.
Well, exactly. Michael Jackson and George Michael. And isn't it interesting that Michael Jackson died on George Michael's birthday, 25th of June? But I'm sure it's just a coincidence. But anyway, Mariah Carey, there's been a whole bunch of stories involving her which has come out in the last few days. So it's very topical to be talking about her now. I don't know why there's such a glut of stuff about her that's come through, but just today I had a story come into my inbox just in time for this show, where we've got a former manager of Mariah Carey allegedly planning to sue her for sexual harassment. And this is a woman by the name of Stella Stolper. So according to this story, she was fired by Mariah Carey in November 2017. She claimed that the singer suffers from substance abuse issues, not the first time we've heard that claim, and she claimed that the star did not take her medication for bipolar disorder. So that's another story that came through recently, Mariah announcing that she's been a sufferer of bipolar disorder for many years. We can get onto that a little bit shortly. So Stella Stolper is alleging that the singer was often naked and performed sexual things in her presence, according to TMZ. Mariah's management is basically dismissing the claim. They're saying she's got no grounds with it. It's not going to go anywhere. They've denied the claims. They've said they'll defend against the allegations if they make it to court. So that was a story that came out just today. It's all very strange. And it came just a few days after we had the story of Mariah's sister, Allison, who is about 8 years her senior, coming out to say that her family had been historically involved in a satanic cult and that she'd been forced to attend rituals from a young age. This story came via The Sun in the UK, which alleges to be a newspaper. It doesn't have the best of reputations because it's a very spurious kind of sensationalist tabloid. But nevertheless, you know, a lot of people only place stock in a story if it comes out via a mainstream paper as opposed to the alternative media. So there's a lot of people that do, place importance on what comes out via The Sun. So The Sun mentioned that Allison, Mariah's sister, was taken by a close family member to these rituals, but it declines to reveal who the close family member is. So I guess the implication would be that it was one of her parents. There's a brother, Morgan, who has also backed up the story. But Allison says she doesn't know for sure whether Mariah herself was present at any of these rituals, as she can't remember seeing her there. And Allison has been an alcoholic. She's been destitute. She's currently surviving on food stamps while her famous sister revels in a multi-million dollar lifestyle. So it's funny how this works out sometimes. You get one particular sibling from a family that enjoys great fame and fortune, and their siblings just get left behind, and they're often drug addicts and live in poverty, and you never hear anything about them. So this is Allison's story, Mariah's sister, and, you know, it's pretty weird stuff.
Yeah, Prince's sister also seems to have been an addict and just destitute.
Right, Tyka.
And she maybe ended up with the vault of Prince's work, and what a madness that would be. Well, okay, so we have children coming forward describing these type of heinous rituals involving black hooded robes, weird altars at night, molestation, right, sexual predation, and perhaps even bloody sacrifice.
Well, that's exactly what Allison is saying about what went on at these events that they would get taken to. So she says the ceremonies or rituals were always between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. Interesting that 3 a.m. is often known as the witching hour, when this reality is supposed to be the closest to the spirit world in terms of that thin veneer that separates the two. And she says they weren't every week, as far as I can remember, just on certain significant dates. She says everyone would wear long robes with black hoods and walk in twos across to this place. Inside, they would start the rituals and they would be chanting in another language. I think it was Latin. And she then goes on to say terrible things would happen, things a child should never see. She says, I was sexually abused there. They told me if I didn't do what they told me, or if I told them what was going on, they would harm Mariah. So apparently Allison and Mariah have been estranged for years. They've not spoken, you know, for a very long time. And she's got no way of contacting Mariah. She's got no phone number, or she doesn't know her address. She's just got absolutely no way of getting through to her. All very disturbing stuff.
Yeah, very bizarre.
And right in the wake of this story emerging, there was another one. So we've had three major Mariah Carey stories in the last few days, couple of weeks, where Mariah revealed that she suffers from bipolar disorder and has done for many years. And interestingly, this condition is said to have begun in 2001, which brings me on to a previous story. This is one that I've mentioned in my first book, and I've also discussed it in some of my public talks. I've got this newspaper article from 2001 where Mariah Carey is said to have suffered a breakdown. It says she's undergoing psychiatric treatment in hospital today after a nervous breakdown and a suspected suicide attempt. The 31-year-old singer's publicist denied that she tried to take her own life, but Carey's mother apparently made a distraught call to emergency services last week after her daughter was discovered in her New York hotel room bleeding from slit wrists and cuts to her body. I made the observation in my first book that this seems to be indicative of mind control programming breaking down. And it puts me in mind of many other incidents where we've seen similar things. So there's the Britney Spears head shaving incident, which is a classic one. You got the situation with Kanye West when he was at his concert in Sacramento towards the end of 2016, where he started babbling incoherently and he went off on this long rant. And he seemed to be calling out Jay-Z in that event as his mind control handler. He was saying all kinds of crazy stuff like, "Jay, don't be sending those killers up in my head now." He said that two or three times. And straight after he finished his rant, Kanye West was forcibly handcuffed to a gurney and led off for a psychiatric evaluation. And he was gone from the public eye for several weeks before appearing again with newly dyed peroxide blonde hair. Then you've got the situation with Anna Nicole Smith, which I know you've documented a lot yourself, where she seems to regress to the personality of a four-year-old girl in this video. You've got people like Lindsay Lohan that have been running around Hollywood just doing crazy things, smashing up cars and behaving erratically. And, you know, you've got individuals like Nicki Minaj, who often seems to slip into different personalities during interviews. She'll become three different people during the interview with a different accent for each. And it all seems to be very consistent with what we hear about trauma-based mind control programming and what happens when it starts to break down and needs to be topped up. So the situation with Britney when she shaved her head was that she disappeared from public view for quite some time. She was said to have gone into rehab. And I wonder if rehab is code for programming being topped up.
Well, they're and these sent to the crossroads.
Right.
Come on. where Robert Johnson met the devil, you know, that's where they sent Lindsay Lohan, Britney. They all go to the crossroads, which is owned by Eric Clapton. And, you know, the crossroads, folks, that is the infamous place where Robert Johnson met with the devil to get his music career going. It's you know, come on. This type of
symbolism
stuff is
much. Yeah, so it makes me wonder whether rehab is code for mind control programming, because anyone that's done more than 5 minutes research into the true nature of the music industry and the entertainment industry generally will understand that trauma-based mind control, monic programming, and other methods are absolutely rampant throughout that industry. And many of your favorite artists, many of the household names that we all know, will have been subject to it. Sorry, just the way it is. It's not that way because I want it to be. It's not that way because I say it is. It's that way because that's the truth of the matter. Then you have Mariah talking about this bipolar disorder then. So she's come out in 2018 and she said, "Oh, I've suffered from this condition for many years." And she said it dates back to 2001, which was the year of that apparent attempted suicide, when she had to be taken off stage, similar to Kanye West. She was up on stage at a show and she was babbling incoherently on the mic. She was being very unpredictable and behaving erratically, and her manager handler had to lead her off stage and, you know, take her away. So bipolar disorder involves an individual switching from a very depressed kind of state where they just don't want to face the world and they're absolutely at the end of their rope, to becoming hyperactive and very excitable and just running around like they've done 5 grams of cocaine, you know, switching between these different personalities. And that's what we see with many of these artists. But again, it makes me wonder whether bipolar could be code for mind control programming, because it is a very convenient way of writing off erratic and unconventional behavior if you need to explain to the public why their favorite artist is behaving in these strange ways and you don't want to admit that they've been subject to mind control programming. Then you may have to state that they've got some kind of mental condition which is supposed to be clinically treatable and is a recognized medical condition, you know. And this whole bipolar situation put me in mind very much of Adam Ant, who is an artist who has also come out and said that he's been a lifelong sufferer of bipolar disorder. This gets into a whole section of my new book, Musical Truth 2, where I'm going into 1980s pop videos and looking at some of the symbolism that's been embedded in those and has been entering the subconscious mind of the general public for the past 30 odd years, with most people having no idea what it means and the effect that it's having. So Adam Ant, his real name is Stuart Goddard, has said in interviews that he's a sufferer of bipolar disorder and other mental health issues. In my book, I've mentioned he incurred mockery and derision through the mainstream headlines following a January 2002 incident in which he's said to have pulled out a gun and gone berserk at the Prince of Wales pub in London's Kentish town. He was forcibly detained at the Royal Free Hospital at this point. Some years before, during his period of living in LA, he was forcibly committed to that city's unsettling Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, an institution long suspected of being a front for the state-sponsored mind control programming of celebrities. I've gone into Cedars-Sinai a lot in previous shows because the amount of celebrities that have been rushed there under some pretense or another is absolutely staggering, and it certainly does seem to be steeped in mind control programming. I certainly think that's one of the places where this gets done. And interestingly, during this period of living in America, Adamant was romantically linked to the American actress Heather Graham, whose roles included that of Roller Girl in Boogie Nights. So there we've got another celebrity link up, and I'm sure many of these are arranged. And Adamant's situation couldn't help but remind me of that of Syd Barrett, in turn, who was the original frontman of Pink Floyd. He was kicked out of that group after only a couple of years due to his mental state, and this had always been put down to his heavy use of LSD and other hallucinogens. The idea is that it destroyed his sanity, and it's gone down in rock music lore that he kind of fried his brains in that way. But given the widespread prevalence of programming throughout the industry, is it possible that what we witnessed with Syd Barrett was another example of programming going wrong and him just going off the rails, and the whole thing had to be very quickly covered up? So he was replaced by Dave Gilmour in that group, and Syd Barrett faded into obscurity. And he actually lived to the age of 60, but, you know, nothing was heard of him in the public eye, and seemingly the rest of his life wasn't particularly happy. So Adamant, it becomes very interesting to look at who his father was, because when you get into why certain artists are selected for key roles in the industry, why certain singers or band members become famous over and above any other contenders that might have taken that role, it becomes interesting to look at the family. It can be a bloodline thing, a genealogical thing. It can be, you know, the ancestry from which this individual comes. Or it can be what the father was involved with. In so many cases, we've seen fathers of rock musicians that have come out of the military industrial complex, or they've been connected to the intelligence services, CIA, FBI, the Pentagon, the DOD, something like that. In Britain, it would be MI5, MI6. Syd Barrett's father, incidentally, was a doctor, a scientist who worked on different projects for the British government, coming out of Cambridge University. So there's an interesting link there. So Adamant's father was Alfred Leslie Goddard, and he doesn't come with a particularly noble past. He was jailed for 2 years in 1987 for allegedly being part of a paedophile ring operating out of Westminster in London. And this ring was said to be responsible for procuring child victims for elite paedophiles. It was connected to the whole Dolphin Square parliamentary paedophile scandal, which emerged in recent years. And it had connections to Sidney Cook, who was a notorious British paedophile, and also connections in turn to Jimmy Savile. The Daily Mail reported in 2015 that Goddard Sr., Adamant's dad, had been a member of this network. It was later convicted of the sadistic gang rape and killing of a teenage boy. At the time, Goddard lived in Pimlico, close to the Dolphin Square apartments, as I just mentioned. Adamant later claimed in an interview that his father's jail stint is what shortened his life. And also, Adamant's father was in the military. He served in the army. So we've got a military link there. We've got a direct connection to paedophilia. We've got hints at mind control programming through the irrational and strange behavior of the artist in question. And it's just incredible to me. You know, you've got Mariah Carey over in the US in the 90s and the 2000s behaving in the same kind of strange way as Adamant has through the years over in Britain. And these things just seem to crop up on both sides of the Atlantic decade after decade. And it seems to be templates and blueprints that are just rolled out generation after generation, genre after genre. And it's been right there under our noses for all these years, and very few people have known what to look for. And it's only now that so many researchers are jumping on this and learning to spot what's been lurking beneath the surface and what the significance of it all is.
Without a doubt, because there is a plan. These groups and icons are engineered for social engineering. And certainly Adamant would be one of the early transgender social engineering campaigns that would have come out. He was very flamboyant, and I'm a big fan of Adam Ant. Actually, I have two of his records, and
right, great music.
Goody two shoes, yeah. But so there's so many layers to this. So just from our conversation so far, we're talking about social engineering campaigns with military CIA intelligence backgrounds. We're dealing with like Jim Morrison's dad, who was on,
Jim Morrison's dad. Well, he basically started the Vietnam War, didn't he?
Started the Vietnam War. You got David Crosby, his dad being in this. And we've got that layer of military involvement in the music industry, which kind of brings you back to Josie and the Pussycats and programming and engineering. You got another layer that has each of these icons ritually abused, pedophilia. And you got another layer where this ritual abuse is happening with hooded robes, altars, and black magic involved.
Right. And where you find one, you invariably find the others.
The rest.
So where military intelligence is present, there's usually some kind of spurious link to pedophilia or satanic ritual, or, you know, these strange bloodline links. They all seem to be interconnected, and you wouldn't necessarily expect to find any of these things on the surface, but they're always there. They never disappoint. There's just a few more things with Mariah that I wanted to mention just before we finish up on her, because we can really go into her in a big way. She was married for a time to Tommy Mottola, who was an artist in his own right in the 1960s, and he was a song pitcher to various record labels. And he then worked his way up to become CEO of Columbia Records, which is part of the Sony Corporation. So he was a big industry mogul, and he ended up marrying Mariah. It was reportedly quite a disastrous marriage. It was obviously a sham. It didn't last very long. But what's very interesting to me is that when this relationship broke down, he made a comment in his book. He put out an autobiography where he covered his relationship with Mariah, and he describes the final breakup in this way. He says that he went to work and he left a note with lyrics to an Elton John song on the nightstand, and the lyrics were, "Butterflies are free to fly, fly away." So interesting that he's raised butterflies there, because the monarch butterfly is a symbolic rendering of the presence of monarch programming, which is one of these methods of trauma-based mind control that so many of these artists have been through. Mariah Carey put out an album in 1997 called Butterfly, in which she's clutching a monarch butterfly with that very distinctive orange speckled coloring on the cover of the album. I mean, how bloody blatant do you want it? It also appears again on the sleeve to her greatest hits album of 2001, which was the year of her breakdown. So I wonder why they felt the need to call that album Butterfly. So one of her other relationships after Tommy Mottola was with Nick Cannon, the actor and whatever else it is Nick Cannon has done. And they had two children together, twins, who they named Moroccan and Monroe. I wonder if Monroe is a reference to Marilyn Monroe, because we get into another method of mind control programming here, which is beta sex kitten programming. Anna Nicole, who we mentioned earlier, was a definite member of that particular club. And Marilyn Monroe was the original icon of beta sex kitten programming, which is a whole different thing, where sex slaves are basically programmed to be put to use by the rich and famous. So we hear that Marilyn Monroe was something of a sex slave to JFK and many other people, and she seems to have been the original prototype of that particular method of things. So, you know, Mariah Carey's named one of her twins Monroe. But anyway, during the time that she was pregnant, she took to painting a picture of a butterfly on her pregnant stomach, along with the words, "dem babies." So why would you do that? That's a very strange thing to do. Another album that she put out was one called Rainbow. And when we get into mind control programming triggers, we hear that Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the song from The Wizard of Oz, has been identified as a mind control trigger. You get these different songs and phrases and words that, when they're heard, tend to trigger the programming and bring in these different personalities that have been created within these people. So alongside The Wizard of Oz, you hear that about Alice in Wonderland and Alice Through the Looking Glass, those Lewis Carroll stories. They're said to be big programming triggers. And of course, The Catcher in the Rye, which Mark Chapman was reading just before he shot John Lennon, allegedly, as was John Hinckley Jr. when he was trying to kill Reagan. Catcher in the Rye keeps on popping up. But Somewhere Over the Rainbow is one of those as well. And Mariah Carey put out this album called Rainbow. There's a great big bloody rainbow on the sleeve. So it certainly does seem as if we've had no shortage of little indicators and clues as to what she's been subject to. And when you factor in all this strange behavior that's been written off as being the product of bipolar, and then you throw in the story of her sister talking about these satanic rituals they were taken to when they were young, and the former manager saying that she was sexually harassed by Mariah, it all becomes a big mess. But it's certainly consistent with mind control programming. And it just goes to show what unhappy lives these celebrities live, really. You know, I mean, we look to them and we think they've got all this fame and wealth, and they've got yachts and mansions, and they can go anywhere they want in the world, and money's no object. But really, when you delve beneath the glossy surface and you get to all this ugly business, you come to realize you're actually better off being an average Joe. You're actually better off not being a part of these institutions, because you can live freely. You can be a sovereign being. You can come and go as you please. You're not beholden to anyone. These people, unfortunately, whether they've been born into it through their bloodline links or whether they've been chosen by the industry, because that's the two ways that you get inducted into all this. You either come from one of these genealogical families, or you get spotted by one of these industry associates whose job it is to seek out people that seem to have some talent and skill, and they make them an offer that seems too good to be true. They sign on the dotted line, and before they fully realize what it is they've got into, they're trapped and there's no way out. But now they're part of the industry machine. So you come to realize that you really are better off staying out of this. And I always say to up-and-coming musicians or bands that want to make it big that don't give up on your dreams. You know, by all means, follow your heart and go where you want to go and pursue your talent as far as you can. But be very wary when that offer comes, when you're offered some kind of glittering contract that seems too good to be true. Be very, very wary of what it is you're about to get into. And I apply that to my own situation, because for many, many years, I wanted to be a DJ on BBC Radio 1 here in the UK, and One Extra, which is this black music station that they launched in 2002. And I was desperate, you know, back then I was really hungry for success, and I was very ruthless in trying to further myself as a DJ, and I so wanted to get on those networks. And it used to frustrate me so much when I would send up demo tapes, I would turn up at the building trying to speak to the appropriate manager, and I just keep getting knocked back. No thanks, you know, run along now, son. You know, used to make me so mad. But I'm looking back on it now and I'm thinking that was my greatest gift. It's the greatest thing that never happened to me, being a part of that.
God, because, I didn't make it.
Exactly, because if I had, and I was now out here doing all this work and spilling the beans on what goes on, it would be a very different situation. Because when you become a part of
that, just Eazy-E you, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. When you become a part of that whole thing, and then you become a whistleblower, you know, life isn't always made that easy for you. So far better to not get into it in the first place, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, they came forward. Oh man, I'm forgetting my hip hop artist, but maybe you'll know. Where he's on stage and say, you know, we don't, it was like Big E or somebody like that saying, well, we don't need to worry about any of that because we can just Eazy-E his ass. which Eazy-E seems to have been stabbed by a hypodermic needle and died of AIDS.
Right. And you, like, you had Suge Knight, who was the CEO of Death Row Records, to which Eazy-E was affiliated. He came out on the Jimmy Kimmel show a few years ago, and he appeared to be indicating that Eazy-E had been deliberately stabbed with a hypodermic needle infested with AIDS.
Which just and he's happened kind of, to Corey Feldman.
Right.
Somebody opened his car door just last month, opened his car door, stabbed him with a needle, and ran away. And Corey was immediately in the hospital and texting, you know, tweeting. I follow him religiously on Twitter.
seems to be the new
way
of doing
it. He's the one guy trying to get the stuff out from the inside, right?
Right, exactly. So like I said, when you become a whistleblower from the inside, your life isn't necessarily that easy.
Yeah, think of, you were talking about how they would throw a monarch butterfly on there, you know, signs of allegiance, letting everybody know. Another like Mariah Carey would be Katy Perry, and you know, considered R&B. And she was going to put out an album called, I believe it was going to be called Schizophrenia. Now, we just did a number of shows here on the Free Zone about schizophrenia and the demonic voices. And so you could just take that as you will. But instead of calling the album Schizophrenia, it was changed to Prism, which obviously is a fracture of light and a fracture of the mind. Right. And Katy Perry stated that she intended to live a little before she got this new music going so that it would be worth listening to. When her ex-husband, Russell Brand, right, who flashed the mark of the beast, the mark of the beast by Satanist is that O and X symbol, that very brand X of Russell Brand. When Russell Brand left Katy Perry in December of 2011, she was devastated and considered suicide. Perry revealed to Vogue that she planned to record a darker album than her previous records. She says, it was inevitable. After what I went through, if I had a time machine, I'd go back. Now, that's another layer of celebridom that we might get to in the second hour. But Perry just came forward and said, quote, this is going to be really fucking dark. And that was her album, Schizophrenia or Prism. And you got songs like Dark Horse, which were really bizarre. Definitely some, you know, weird military programming going on through Katy Perry constantly, obviously. And just this connection of the family members, the rituals. Of course, Katy comes from a Christian background, trying to be Kate Hudson, but then sold her soul to the devil, according to her own admission.
Her own words.
And but we've got the whole family connections in this thing, like you were saying. You know, when we look at Whitney Houston's death, a lot of people didn't note that her daughter drowned in the bath the night before. She did not die, but she was rushed to the hospital and was returned from the hospital to the hotel in time to be there for her mother dying in the same bathtub, drowning.
Was it Cedars Sinai Hospital by any remote chance?
I'd have to look into that, you know.
Wouldn't surprise.
It's worth looking into. But you know that during this party, they kept Whitney Houston's body in the room above them while they continued their, what was it, Emmys or Oscars party, one of the music, Grammys.
Right? The Grammys, party. Yeah, Clive Davis hosted that party.
Right.
He's a very dark character.
And just keeping that body up there. And then we look at Anna Nicole, and she had her son come into her hospital room and drop dead. So you had the death of the firstborn, then the death of the mother. And of course, the daughter, Dani Lynn, seems to be a direct descendant of Adolf Hitler through a boys from Brazil sort of scenario of implanting Hitler's semen into Gretel Braun to produce Prince Frederick von Anhalt, who keeps Zsa Zsa Gabor locked up in his mansion and under padlock, and admitted that he was the one that in a mysterious ritual night or a mysterious party, I guess he called it, he did have sex with Anna Nicole and produced Daniel Lynn, the little baby, who was then given $1 billion from the Nazi oil tycoon that Anna Nicole had been married to. These stories can't get any weirder. Now well, you got exactly. Mariah Carey's sister coming forward saying, yes, we were taken to these black robe rituals. Black magic was being performed. Sexual attacks and sacrifice were occurring. We have little children telling us over and over again things that they just could not know. You've seen these videos of how these children couldn't really make this stuff up unless you were really letting them watch a lot of Hollywood.
Yeah. Just what you were saying there about the death of the firstborn child.
Yes.
Which seems to occur with many famous people. I put a section in my first book about how this particular tenet seems to arise in the world of politics, particularly in the UK. And I mentioned that Tony Blair, the former British Prime Minister, his wife Sherry suffered a miscarriage in 2002. Then the next PM after Blair was Gordon Brown. He and his wife Sarah announced the death of their firstborn, a daughter named Jennifer Jane, also in 2002. Then Brown's successor in 2010 was David Cameron, and the previous year he and his wife Samantha had announced the death of their firstborn son Ivan, who's said to have been born with a rare combination of cerebral palsy and a form of severe epilepsy. And Ivan had been born in 2002 as well. So they're an unlucky lot, these politicians. That's three British prime ministers in a row that have all suffered the traumatic deaths of their firstborns. And I'm reminded of a story about Prince as well, who didn't actually have any kids, but his wife, is it Mate or Mighty? I'm not sure how you pronounce it, M-A-Y-T-E. She suffered a miscarriage, it's reported, as well. And so, you know, that was the death, effectively, of what would have been Prince's firstborn. So that becomes quite interesting. Just picking up on Katy Perry there, who you mentioned. Another visual indicator of the presence of mind control programming would appear to be, and this will sound very strange until it's explained, closely cropped blonde hair. All right. So Katy Perry, around the time of her Bon Appetit video, which came out last year, underwent a makeover. And she turned out with this new look, which was closely cropped blonde hair. The Bon Appetit video in which she rocks that look is a very disturbing one because it seems to be conveying cannibalism. She's basically being prepared by a bunch of chefs. She's being rolled in flour and they put her in a tub of hot water. And you've got all these images that hint at her being eaten. It's cannibalism. And this came out round about the time of all the revelations of the spirit cooking dinners of Marina Abramovich, which was linked to that whole Pizzagate fiasco at the end of 2016. And we heard of these parties where the rich and famous would attend, and Marina Abramovich would have this cake, which was a life-size replica of a female body, a naked female body. And the guests would all cut into this cake and take a slice of it and eat it. And I've heard about some of the stuff that went into the ingredients of the cake, so I think I'll be passing on a slice of that myself, thanks. But some images in this Katy Perry video that look very similar to, she looks very similar to this life-size female cake that they had at the spirit cooking dinners. And also something I've mentioned recently in my public talks is, if you do a Google image search with the phrase Rothschild Party 1972, you get a whole bunch of images of one of these get-togethers at one of the Rothschild country mansions, which is very reminiscent of Eyes Wide Shut and what we saw with the elite sex party going on there. You got all these aristocrats in weird, creepy face masks, animal masks and stuff, and wearing horns and things like that. And there's this one particular picture where you've got a female laid out on a table in exactly the same fashion as Katy Perry is in the Bon Appetit video, which becomes interesting. But I mentioned the closely cropped blonde hair because this is a look that you see rocked by many celebrities at a particular point in their career. So Miley Cyrus, when she stopped being Hannah Montana and she came out rocking that whole satanic slut thing, and she started doing all this stuff on stage, touching herself up and dressing as a baby and simulating masturbation, all this good stuff, you know, she came out with closely cropped blonde hair. Particularly in that show that she was at with Robin Thicke, where she was sticking her tongue out, and you indicated that she seemed to be evoking Carly in that particular ritual. Right. You know, she had the closely cropped blonde hair there. Justin Bieber appeared in the video to the DJ Khaled single I'm the One with a new look, which is closely cropped blonde hair. You can think back to Eminem when he first emerged. He came out with the peroxide blonde hair, and that was his trademark look for many, many years. More recently, he's appeared with dark hair, his natural color. And actually, on the song that he put out with Beyonce last year called Walk on Water, he actually talks of washing the blonde out of his hair as if he's disowning his previous guise or personality and wanting to escape from it and move on. Then my mind goes to Mia Farrow in Rosemary's Baby, that incredible movie from 1968. Roman Polanski movie, where Mia Farrow's character goes for the same look right around the time that she falls into the clutches of the satanic cult that's operating out of the Dakota building in New York. So she goes from having longer hair to having this closely cropped hair. And the other one is that in her very early years, we had Dolores O'Riordan of the Cranberries rocking that very same look. So if you do a Google image search on young Dolores O'Riordan, you'll see a whole bunch of pictures of her with that same dyed peroxide blonde hair. So it leads me to wonder whether this is another indicator of mind control programming, possibly satanic ritual abuse, thinking of Rosemary's Baby, that's what that was all about. Is it a way of communicating to those in the know that an individual rocking this look has been subject to that kind of trauma-based programming? It might sound fantastic and outrageous to people when they first hear it, but again, if you do more than 5 minutes research into this whole area, you come to realize that, unfortunately, this stuff is very real. The thing about Dolores O'Riordan is that she was the latest victim of death by hotel room, which seems to be quite common with celebrities. So she turned up dead in a hotel room on Park Lane in London, just across from Hyde Park, on the 15th of January this year. And the method of her death has not been adequately explained. It was just reported in the media at the time that she's turned up dead in this hotel room. The police are saying there was no evidence of foul play and there's nothing suspicious about it. Sure, because 47-year-olds die in hotel rooms all the time, don't they? She was in perfect health evidently before that. She was phoning friends, making plans for the future. This is something we hear about a lot of celebrities as well. When you think of death by hotel room, you've got the likes of Janis Joplin, Whitney Houston, of course, who we mentioned, Michael Hutchence of INXS, turned up dead in a hotel room in Sydney, Australia, Chris Cornell, turned up dead in a hotel room in Detroit. In the case of Michael Hutchence, I've mentioned in my first book that he made telephone calls to people the day before he was found dead, where he was making social plans and he sounded to be in good spirits and basically looking forward to the future. And Chris Cornell, you get conflicting stories about him because his wife Vicky first of all said that he didn't seem to be depressed at all the last time she spoke to him, and he was making plans for the future as well. But in later comments she gave, she spoke of how he'd shown signs of being depressed lately. So there's some conflict there between the things that she was saying. But the point is, you get all these stars turning up dead in hotel rooms, and it tends to be accepted by the general public on the basis that, oh, it's the rock and roll lifestyle. It's just the way these people live. They can get away with not giving you an exact cause of death because people think, oh, you know, rock and rollers, they do drugs, don't they? And they're into all kinds of crazy lifestyles. So it's not surprising that a few of them turn up dead every now and again.
They probably always have Cyril Wecht in the background, like he did with Michael Jackson, like he did with Prince. And Cyril Wecht is the pathologist that works on all the celebrities from JFK all the way up, Anna Nicole. And although he was not involved in the investigation of Michael Jackson nor Prince, he came forward and, of course, he gets all the press and said he believed that this was an opioid addiction problem and that they died of overdose. This is what he believes without any evidence, without being in a coroner, without looking. And so they put Cyril Wecht. I mean, he's like an icon of mind control death. If you see that name, Cyril, it's W-E-C-H-T is his last name. You see Cyril come up, then you know there's something going on. I mean, he was the guy who autopsied JFK. He's the guy who autopsied Elvis. He's the guy who autopsied, you know, it's on and on and on and on and on. He's the one that they shove into your face. And when he says, well, I think Prince died of an opioid overdose, everybody says, oh, okay.
Well, if Cyril says so, it must be true.
Even though he was not involved. He states that too. Well, I didn't see any of the documentation, any of the evidence, but in my opinion, it's this. And then they never need to say anything more about it.
Right. And with Dolores O'Riordan, we've heard that the coroner's report has been put back. So back in January, they were saying, oh, don't expect the coroner's report to be released until April at the earliest. And in the last few days, we've now been told that it's been pushed back, and we now don't know when we're going to get the results. Right. By which time, of course, most members of the public have forgotten all about it. Exactly. They'll remember that Dolores O'Riordan turned up dead in a hotel room, but they won't have any information on how it actually occurred. And subconsciously in their minds, they're probably putting it down to a drugs overdose or something like that, because that's what we get with most of these artists. I think if you stop most people in the street and said, what did Michael Jackson die of? What did Prince die of? What did Whitney Houston die of? They'd have this faint idea that it was some kind of overdose, but they wouldn't be able to give you any information beyond that. I really do think that many of these artists are taken out by the forces behind the industry. It's often done in a ritualistic kind of fashion, but they have to find different methods of doing it, because it takes a lot of time and trouble to go to the extent of programming a mind control assassin like Mark Chapman. That was a major investment to do away with John Lennon. And they wouldn't be able to get away with that kind of thing happening too often. So that was used for Lennon. Then you've got the situation with Bob Marley, where he appears to, according to the story, have been given a pair of boots as a gift by this guy, Carl Colby, who turns out to have been the son of the one-time CIA director, William Colby, who was a filmmaker at the time. And he managed to get into Bob Marley's compound, where he was living in highly guarded conditions following that attempt on his life, the assassination attempt in 1976, in the wake of him playing that political benefit concert in Jamaica. And Colby is said to have given Bob Marley this pair of boots. And when he put the boots on, he cried out in pain, and on examination, there appeared to have been a copper wire which had stabbed his big toe. Then a short while later, we get the news that Bob Marley has broken his toe whilst playing football, and doctors have discovered the presence of this rare form of cancer, which spread rapidly through his body. So again, going to those kind of lengths takes quite a lot of resources. I would suggest it's far easier to give somebody an overdose of fentanyl, at least as far as the cover story goes, or just imply that they took too many drugs and, you know, did themselves in that way. So they have to vary the methods. And maybe, you know, hypodermic needles infested with AIDS is going to be the new thing. Who knows?
Yeah. I completely understand Corey Feldman's fear. So as we're wrapping up this first hour, wow, it has been a powerhouse, and I can't wait to dig into the second hour. And I want all the folks listening to know that in the second hour, we're going to get into all the things that we're not allowed to say on YouTube. So that is one beauty of the members section, is I don't have to worry about getting banned, blocked, or anything, deleted, or even anything.
Damn, I thought we just did all that in hour one.
Well, yeah, we did, but we didn't. There are levels to go. And we're going to get deeper into that. But before we move on to, you know, talking about things like Sandy Hook and things that we're not allowed to talk about on YouTube, I wanted to ask your opinion, just as a final kind of thought in this section, about where your mind is going with this. Because I remember getting, when I started studying this stuff, it messed me up, right? It really did. To really realize that this was all real. You got into Dave McGowan, and then you realized, oh my God, the court systems are all a part of this. The police are all a part of this. They can just take you out, not even worry. And then you get into that other layer, like, wait a minute, they're practicing these black magic rituals. Britney's having to cut off all her hair, saying, I don't want things programmed into me anymore. And they need these ritual goddesses. And then now you're on this level of black magic. You know, where have you gone in this? I mean, are you starting to really think that our elites are in communication with some sort of demonic forces and actually using these mind control celebrities to communicate with demonic forces? Or are you getting the idea that this is a mind control program that is used for social engineering? I mean, of course, it's all of these, but I want to know how you're starting to relate to this.
Right. Well, when I first took on a comprehension of how nobody in the public eye is what you thought they were, of course, it was devastating and it was very difficult to come to terms with. It's actually quite difficult for me to go back in my mind to that point in my life now, because I've been into this level of research for 8 years and it now just feels completely normal to me because I do it all the time. And it feels as if I've always known that the world is nothing like we thought it was. But there was a point where I was in the grip of a mind control fog and I drank the Kool-Aid just the same as anyone else. And sometimes I have to go to great lengths to remember what my mind state was like at that time. So I can understand why people have great difficulty in hearing stuff about their favorite icons, their favorite celebrities. Nobody wants to hear it. With me, the most difficult thing was finding out that many DJ heroes that I had were working for the system and were doing work in line with social engineering agendas. That was devastating to me because I looked up to these people and they were inspirations to me in terms of where I wanted my DJ career to go, but I can see they're not who I thought they were. And everyone's going to have someone like that. It might be somebody like Bill Gates or Steve Jobs that you looked up to. It might be a consciousness guru like Terence McKenna or Timothy Leary. It might be a politician like Trump. And eventually you come to discover that none of these people are what you thought they were. They're all doing some kind of work for the control system. If they weren't, quite simply, you wouldn't have heard of them. Because if you're famous, if you're a household name, if you could stop the average person in the street and mention this name to them and they know who you mean, then that person is doing some kind of work for the system. They've not got there organically. They've not got there under their own steam. That might seem like a very sweeping statement, but I've done enough work into this whole area now to understand that that's actually the case. In terms of what's really going on, I don't discount the idea that the occult practitioners of these industries could be in contact with some kind of demonic entities. I've not really gone down that route of research too much. Like I say, I don't discount the possibility, but my feeling on the whole thing is that what we're dealing with really is just unbelievable levels of evil. I think we've just got incredibly evil people, and we've got this mindset and this overall condition of evil that all these people have been degraded and debased into. I think it comes down to the true nature of this reality and why any of us choose to incarnate here and have our experiences here in the first place. You know, there's balance and duality in everything, in creation. And this place in which we live is a blank canvas where any kind of situation can manifest according to the will and the intent of those of us that have consciousness and the ability to change and, you know, affect our surroundings. So if we had a realm of existence where the vast majority of people understood the workings of natural law, you know, spiritual law, and applied that in their lives and abided by the principle of do not harm others, then we would have, you know, basically a utopia and a paradise that we could all live in. But unfortunately, while that is a possibility, the opposite is also a possibility, which is you can, if you choose, disregard those rulings and you can adopt a very satanic mindset, which is service to self, and you can undertake some very evil practices. And if you do that, then the play out in physical manifestation is going to reflect the level of consciousness that went into it. And I think that we're just living in a world of evil. This is a testing ground for us as spirit souls. Life is very much a game, and we come here to learn these lessons. And maybe we wouldn't learn the lessons that our souls need to grow and evolve if there wasn't evil around and all the challenges and pitfalls that it brings. Those are really my feelings on it. I think we've got a group of people running these industries and running the world of politics and everything else that are of a very, very satanic mindset. And because they're in control of everything, their way of doing things has pervaded the whole of society.
Very well said, Mark. Very well. I can tell that you have dug deep into this. Folks, his website is markdevlin.co.uk. Mark Devlin. Just check him out. DJ Mark Devlin. Of course, everything will be linked right here on freemantv.com for you to get his books and to dig deeper into all of this. And we're going to take it over into the members section where I allow it to get super weird and love to just have that little secret room where we can all come together and talk and feel like we're not being logged, databased, and archived by Big Brother. So I hope you will come over to freemantv.com and subscribe today, or just dig around the website. There are 13 years of archives there. You will gain from time at freemantv.com. It's there for you and for all this to start sinking in and to realize where we're at. And Mark says it best, that we're introduced to this nefarious force to really shine as bright as we can as a positive force. What do you got coming up right now, Mark? You've got the new book, Musical Truth Volume 2. What's going down in Mark Devlin's world?
Well, a whole load of stuff very different to what was going down 8 years ago, I'll tell you. Yeah. Back then, I was all about, when's the next DJ gig? Where's the next party? These days, I'm all about, where's the next truth conference? Where's the next meetup group? You know, that's my thing now. So I was in the States earlier this year, actually, just a few weeks ago. I did a conference in Phoenix that was put on by Ivan Ayola, and that was called Truth Mind Reality. That was a great event. Mark Passio spoke at that one. I also did a book launch event in LA, in Venice. So for the rest of this year, I'm doing a book tour around the UK, and I've got a couple of dates in Europe. I'm going to Denmark, I'm going to Sweden, I'm going to Ireland. So not going back on US shores for quite a while. But the book is out, Musical Truth 2. It's been out for a few weeks. If anyone wants to get a copy, I'm mailing out signed copies of the book. You can get it on Amazon. But if anyone wants to, you know, support the author and get a signed copy, of course, Amazon aren't the most ethical company in the world. So you can help a brother out by, you know, purchasing it direct. And if anyone wants to do that, they're welcome to send me an email to markdevlinuk@gmail.com, and we can make that happen.
And we will have all that information right there for you on this post, so that you can just go right there and click it and get it.
Are you there?
Yeah, sorry about that. And we will have that linked right there for you on freemantv.com for you to get all of Mark's works and check deep into this. And I'm so looking forward to this next hour, because, I mean, as strange as all of this has been, we really haven't dug into the details, and the devil is in the details, as we are going to see. So much more to come. I hope you will come on over and subscribe, help keep this show going, sponsor it so it continues to come out to the world. And if you're not a member now, become one soon. And if not, we will see you all next week. Some reason my brain is short-circuiting, so let's end this here. What a great talk. I've got so many thoughts in my mind that I can't wait to just start blabbing at you on the other side there, Mark.
All right. Always the best way.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in and sticking with me and keeping this going for 13 years. I look forward to it. It's an amazing thing that this has become my life, so I always want to thank you for that. And we will see you all next week.
All right, thanks.